This is the last, the fourth of a series on Central America, and we're entitling this New Hopes for Peace in Central America, a look at the alternatives. For those of you who have not been here, I'm Barry Shelley, the program associate here, and have been involved in issues around Central America for some time, and have been, was in Nicaragua last year in 1986. About a month and a half ago, on August the 7th, the five presidents in Central America signed a Central America Regional Peace Plan in Guatemala City. And this was a plan that was originally proposed about 7 months ago by President Arias of Costa Rica. And really, much to the surprise of a lot of people, was negotiated and agreed upon much quicker than most people ever thought it would be. The question now is, will it work? And will the provisions that were set up really be followed? And will it really make a difference? There really is a lot of promise in this plan. I would say that a lot of people have a lot more hope in this plan than anything that's come down the pike in a long time. And yet, at the same time, there are a lot of obstacles, and a lot of those obstacles really depend on how the United States responds. So tonight, I'd really like to look at the history of peace plans in Central America during the last about 5 years, since 1982, and how this one sort of developed, and then look at the plan itself and some things about how it actually came about to be signed and some of the backroom negotiations evidently that took place, and especially in light of how the United States is involved in all of this. And then finally, looking at some of the ways in which the Reagan administration has agreed or disagreed with the plan, and then finally going through how the different countries are responding or will probably respond, and what we can hope for, not hope for, what the whole situation is. And then just to end the time with looking at some things that we can specifically do, and I'll give you some resources, some ideas for people that are looking for that. So, first of all, let me just run through quite briefly what has happened in the last 5 years around peace proposals. In 1981 and 82, there were some negotiations with Nicaragua, between the United States and Nicaragua. And basically, Nicaragua rejected all of them, the proposals from the United States, saying, well, the quote from the ambassador to the United States at the time was, that the U.S. position was like conditions of a victorious power. In other words, you're treating us as though we're to be defeated and you are the winner, and we don't see any reason why we're supposed to be negotiating with you. I mean, I won't even go through the details, but the proposals were calling for Nicaragua to reduce its armed forces, for instance, and Nicaragua's response was, what is the point of this? We don't understand why you have a right to tell us to reduce our armed forces. This was really before the whole Contra war really became a war. There was just the beginnings of it at that particular time. And there were, in 1982, there was a second round of the same kinds of things, which were abandoned in August of 1982. And documents involved in those negotiations, which were leaked later to the press, and their actual documents basically said forthright that the purpose of the negotiations were, quote, to co-opt the negotiations issue. In other words, the negotiations were for the purpose of making it look like we were negotiating, but in reality, the administration had no intention of really wanting to reach an agreement. Those were documents that came out of the proposals and found their way to the press from people who were upset about the negotiations being stopped. In 1983, in January, probably the most, at that time, the most hopeful development was the Contadora Summit. The Contadora countries are Panama, Mexico, Venezuela, and Colombia, none of the Central American countries. But they, being concerned about the stability in the whole region, had a summit meeting on Contadora, which is an island somewhere, I'm not even sure where it is exactly, to try to use their negotiating powers to get the five Central American countries to sit down and talk. And there were a whole series of Contadora conferences and that went all the way through until June of 1986. There was a version that was actually almost signed. In 1984, what had happened was that the treaty reached a point where basically, again, this is my and a lot of other people's interpretations, but the United States was very much involved in the Contadora peace plan and basically had said that they didn't expect Nicaragua to ever sign it. Well, when Nicaragua got ready to sign it in September of 1984, the United States pulled out and refused to accept it. They completely shifted their position 180 degrees because, again, they didn't really want a settlement, or we didn't really want a settlement. And that's, again, that is what happened. So it's, the United States did pull out of it at the last minute. It stalled the talks for a while, and then finally they did get back together, and in June of 86, it looked like there was going to be a signing of the agreement. Nicaragua had actually, for a long time, had held up the negotiations on one particular point about arms limitations and military exercises, and they actually did concede to some of that and made some compromises. And even still, then what happened in the end was that El Salvador refused to sign it. And those of you who've been around, basically the insinuation from a lot of people is that the El Salvador was told not to sign it. El Salvador receives 50% of its budget from the United States, and basically it's a clear indication that they were essentially told not to sign it for that reason. There's some other talks in here that have happened. At the only time that the United States and Nicaragua have talked directly since 1982 was in 1984, when Secretary of State Shultz did start negotiations in Nicaragua, and right after President Reagan was reelected, they disbanded the talks again. So since that time, the United States has refused to deal with Nicaragua directly, and I'll say some more about that a little bit later. So that's just a quick rundown of, there have been some other little draft treaties here and there, but those are the main points. So you have a situation where after June of 86, a little over a year ago, there was about a six-month lull where nothing happened because El Salvador had refused to sign it. It was sort of back to ground zero, and then the question was, well, what are we going to do? Well, that's when Arias stepped in, really quite unexpectedly. Costa Rica is the one real true, I guess, democracy in Central America, and has been in the more conservative elements of the population in Costa Rica, a real fear and cynicism about Nicaragua. So it was really much to a lot of people's surprise that he would be the one that would step in and make great concessions to Nicaragua, but that's exactly what has happened in the last 6 months. Again, the negotiations started about 6 months ago. The presidents first met themselves on June the 25th, and then they got back together in August for a few more days, and by August the 7th had signed the document. The United States House of Representatives and the Senate have both endorsed the plan, and Reagan has publicly endorsed it as well. But I'll show you in a minute how there was also a proposal at the last minute from Reagan to change that. But I think before we get into that, let me just run down very quickly what the provisions of the plan are. And then I'll talk a little bit about the differences between this plan and the Contadora plan and what makes the difference now that they're willing to sign it, and also some of the differences between this plan and what the United States policy has been, or what the United States proposals have been. These are just the 10 major points, and if anybody wants to, I have the actual text translated into English of the agreement here and some other resources on it. So if anybody's looking at more detail, can do that. First of all, it calls for amnesty of all opposition armed groups. In other words, the Contras in Nicaragua would be given amnesty if they laid down their arms and returned to their homes in Nicaragua. Well, actually, Nicaragua says we have no problems with that. We've been doing that all along. They've had an amnesty program for anybody who would come back and give up their arms. So they've been doing that. And the main thing here is dialogue with unarmed groups. It calls for all countries in Central America to start internal dialogue with all opposition groups who are unarmed. Now, the difference there is that the Reagan administration has always said you need to sit down and talk with the Contras before they unarm. In other words, they're calling for the two sides supposedly sit down and talk. Well, this plan does not require them to talk to the Contras unless they agree to stop fighting first. It calls for a ceasefire that the government would initiate. It calls for full press and political party freedoms. So that would mean that the paper, say, in Nicaragua, which has been censored now for a couple of years, would have to be restored to its full publishing rights. And the Catholic radio station, which was closed down, would have to be done that. And other things, of course, in other countries would also have to be doing the same thing. That there would be a free elections for governments. On an already established schedule, and this is another difference. Reagan has always said Nicaragua has to have elections by 1988. And Nicaragua says, we had elections in 1984. Our constitution doesn't call for elections again until 1990. Why should we have elections again? The Contadora plan, really, that became a real issue. Reagan's proposal has always said, you have to have elections by 1988. This plan says, free elections in all Central American countries according to their constitution, according to the schedule that they already have going, which means Nicaragua would have their elections in 1990 as their schedule. Number five, suspension of military, that should be aid, to guerrilla groups. So that would mean the United States would be called to suspend all aid to the Contras. That's what that means. And six, related to that, is the non-use of territory for guerrillas. In other words, Honduras, where the Contras are essentially all now based, would have to push the Contras out and say, you can no longer base your operations here. So that no country in Central America can let a guerrilla group use its territory for fighting another country in Central America. And that the only case that really applies to is the Contras in this particular case, for the most part. Arms reductions, that would be negotiations over the next few years to reduce arms, and so that arms in each country would be based on a number of factors, but basically on population, on GNP, those kinds of things. That there be a verification committee set up, and they've already started that. They have already met I think within a month after the thing was signed, they have already met and set up the whole committee. They've gotten, it's an internationally represented group from different places in Latin America that would serve as a verification committee, and they would actually go around to the different Central American countries and verify whether or not the provisions of this plan are being met. One of the issues here is that Reagan's proposals have always said the United States should unilaterally do that. I'm not quite sure what we think gives us that right, but that's what Reagan has always said, is that he doesn't want anybody else involved. The United States will do all the verifying. 9, that there be a commission of natural reconciliation in each country. And there was a specific plan laid out about how that was to be done. And basically that is a matter of, in each country, having a commission that's made up of representatives from the different opposition groups that would sit down and start negotiating. So in Nicaragua, that would mean the bishop, the Catholic bishop who has been in opposition to the government now for some time. The other opposition parties have gotten together and selected a representative. There's some others, I think it's 4 or 5 people in each country. And finally, that they elect a Central American Parliament, which would be an ongoing institution which would serve essentially as a grievance group, a forum, so that there was established an ongoing institution so that all the countries in Central America could continue this kind of dialogue and try to deal with problems as they arise. Those are the 10 main points. Now, the main difference between that and the Contadora plan has been what really was left out of this one. All of these points were essentially in the Contadora plan, with a few of the slight differences about, for instance, the elections and whether or not it be on an established schedule or not was always in question. This one about whether or not you had to negotiate with unarmed groups or whether you had to negotiate with armed groups was a question. But there were essentially 4 very important things that were left out of this plan that were in the Contadora plan. First of all, in the Contadora plan was a provision that all foreign military advisors had to be withdrawn. So that would mean that all American military advisors have to leave Honduras. It would also mean that all Soviet and Cuban military advisors have to leave Nicaragua. That it bars all arms imports. It restricts foreign military exercises and it closes all foreign military bases. Now, the United States is essentially the only foreign power that has military bases in Central America. We have them in Honduras. The Soviet Union and Cuba certainly sell arms to Nicaragua, and there are some military advisors there, but they do not have any bases there. So those were always major issues for the United States, obviously. Essentially what Arias has done is to propose an initial plan that can get things started. And then what he has said is that the Contadora process should continue. So these 4 things that I just read about military advisors, foreign bases, are not out of the picture. It's just that they have all agreed, let's go ahead with this other stuff, let's get things moving, and there already is set up in this plan a way for a Contadora process to continue, so these issues would continue to be negotiated. So he's really sort of made some concessions to Nicaragua and at the same time has made some concessions to the U.S. side of it, especially in terms of the press and political party freedoms. Although, see, for instance, before Reagan's already said, you have to do this first and then we'll cut off aid to the Contras. And Nicaragua's always said, we'll do everything at the same time. We'll lift our state of emergency. We'll negotiate We will reduce our arms. We will set up a commission of national reconciliation, but only if you stop funding the Contras at the same time. We don't trust you enough to say we're going to stop doing all this, reduce our arms and stop our imports, and then find that you're not going to cut off your aid to the Contras. So that's also been an issue, is when, what are the steps and the way things happen. So again, the RA's plan is some kind of compromise in there of taking out some of these things that the U.S. has given lip service really to supporting, but every time it came down to signing the document, would not sign a document that would essentially commit the United States to leaving Honduras militarily. So that's a quick rundown. The essentially what happened was then that they gathered in Guatemala City, and on August the 4th, this is 3 days before the thing was actually signed, they received word that a plan was being sent by Reagan, an alternative proposal. And basically what Reagan's plan did was to put back into the pot some of the stuff that I was just talking about. The major thing here is that the Central American Regional Plan, for the first time, treats every Central American country equally. All of the provisions apply to every country. Reagan's plan singled out Nicaragua specifically for a lot of the provisions, so that El Salvador doesn't have to do the same thing, even though they're involved in a guerrilla war. They don't have to do the same kind of thing as Nicaragua. I think I'll just summarize it that way. And then, again, things like the elections have to be held in 1988. You've got to lift your state of emergency before we'll do anything. And then finally, the U.S. will unilaterally verify compliance. In other words, we'll do all of that, don't you worry. We'll take care of it. Well, going into the negotiations, Duarte from El Salvador was expected by most people to oppose the plan. He had certainly been the one resistant in June at the meeting, and people expected that he would be pressured by the U.S. to oppose the plan and to push Reagan's plan. Well, that did not happen. And let me just read you a quote out of an article that I read. The Costa Rican government officials who were involved in negotiating the agreement say an important factor in making the pact possible was the ill-timed introduction of the Reagan Central American Peace Plan and the way it was introduced on the eve of the Guatemala City summit. They're essentially saying that Reagan made it worse on himself by doing what he did. When Arias, who was still in Costa Rica, heard that officials in Washington were saying that the Reagan plan was being sent to Guatemala for consideration by the presidents, he was furious. The Costa Rican president ordered his foreign minister, Nieto, to keep all preliminary discussions focused on the only agreed-upon agenda item, which was consideration of the Arias plan. This was done. Reagan's plan was publicly praised as a positive step forward by all presidents, including Ortega of Nicaragua, but the Reagan plan was quietly set aside during the working sessions of the summit. Arias had, and this is the important part, Arias had created a pride among the regional presidents based on the possibility of Central Americans solving their own problems. The Reagan proposal was seen as a crude intrusion into Central American affairs. And essentially what this analysis says is that they might not have agreed on it so fast had Reagan not pushed himself into the situation. But it really unified the Central American presidents. And when I think they were already moving towards that. And Duarte, the analysis here says that Duarte really became more independent from the U.S. than he's been in a long time, for a couple reasons that he evidently said sort of off the record to some of the Costa Rican officials. The Costa Rican official says that Duarte complained to them about two things. First of all, that the Reagan administration has basically, not publicly at all, but he's saying that what they're doing is cutting their support from him because they have decided in the next election that they are going to support the far right candidate. And that they supported Duarte and actually funded him in his election in the last election. Duarte is saying now that he thinks that they have cut their support from him, and he's also complaining that they have not gotten one penny of aid from the United States in the last year other than military aid. And he says that has undermined my popularity because we have no funds now for any social programs and all the money goes into the military and into the war. And he says, essentially, I can see that as far as the U.S. is concerned, I'm on my way out anyway. So if anything, I'm going to at least try to be seen in history as a peacemaker and not somebody who is just a puppet of the United States. So he reversed his decision and supported the plan. You have to kick that. One other thing that I just think is pretty appalling, unfortunately, and then we'll just look at the prospects for this, is that even though Reagan, I mean, I just really get sick of this kind of stuff. Reagan has publicly endorsed the plan, then he intrudes with an alternative plan, which is very different. He has also, in the last 6 months, these are the things that have changed between U.S. and Costa Rican relationships. None of the $140 million in U.S. aid that was legislated for Costa Rica has been dispersed for the last 6 months. They all of a sudden stopped disbursements in the last 6 months. Before, when the president was a guy named Alberto Monge, I think his name is, who was much more willing to abide by the policy of the United States, there was the aid annually was $300 million. Now in the last 6 months, there's been none, and $140 million has already been appropriated. There has also been in the last 6 months unusually strict bans and restrictions on flowers, clothing, and other Costa Rican exports to the United States, which cuts their export earnings. Last month, the United States, for the first time, refused to intervene with commercial banks on Costa Rica's behalf. Costa Rica is trying to renegotiate their loans. And we have always been a very strong ally of Costa Rica and always intervened on their behalf. Last month was the first time we refused to do that. And finally, in the last 7 months, there has been no ambassador in Costa Rica. It was time to reappoint one. They expected to get one reappointed essentially 6 months ago, and all of a sudden, there's been no one appointed. Now, those are the kinds of things that we don't usually hear about, but that's the kind of pressure that the Reagan administration is now putting on Arias because he is the one that has initiated this plan. And I think that that's pretty obvious that there's some connection. Okay, let's look at what are the prospects then of success in this. What are the responses of the different nations? Nicaragua, who certainly is the country, as far as Central American countries, that everybody's sort of looking to see, well, will they really go along with this? Who knows? But at least they're certainly giving the appearance that they are committed to it. They are already moving with it. They're not sitting on it. The things that they've already done, on August the 11th, which is only 4 days after the signing, Ortega went back to Nicaragua and called together representatives of all the opposition groups to start setting up the National Commission of Reconciliation. and that now has been appointed. He has a whole commission that's already appointed and has started to meet. They agreed to continue the amnesty program for the Contras, and in fact, more and more of the Contras that evidently now are starting, even some of the key ones, they publicly had a press conference not too long ago where one of the key leaders actually came and said, I want to accept the amnesty program. What happened behind the scenes, who knows, but anyway, some of the Contras are turning in their arms now. And they have said that they will, according to the guidelines, if everything and the provisions, if everybody abides by these, that they will lift their state of emergency and take away the ban on La Prensa, which has been the opposition newspaper, and the Catholic radio station. They said they're quite happy to do that. I don't know if they're happy to do it, but they will do it. And finally, there have been two exiled priests, Bishop Vega, whom I actually met with in Nicaragua when I was there, and a Father Carballo, who have been exiled for now about 2 years, that they have already told them they can return. So they are doing a lot of stuff to give the sense that they're making this effort in good faith. I wish we could talk about why Bishop Vega was exiled, but anyway. He was exiled because he came to the United States Congress and lobbied for Contra aid. And Nicaragua said that's treason, which I think if we had somebody from a bishop in the United States that went somewhere else and lobbied for in another government to send aid to a body fighting us, I think we would consider it the same way. Guatemala has just 2 years ago had their first democratic elections in about 50 years. And there is, at least on paper, a democracy that works there. They essentially say, we won't have any problems with this. The question is whether or not it will really make any difference in the guerrilla war. And people have doubts about that, whether that the Commission of Reconciliation will really be able to grapple with some of those issues. It's not as large a guerrilla war as it is in El Salvador or Nicaragua. In El Salvador, probably people are the most cynical about the peace plan really doing much there. The peace plan is really aimed more at Nicaragua than it is at El Salvador. And you cannot necessarily compare the Contras with the FDR-FMLN, which is a guerrilla group in El Salvador. One of the differences is, for instance, if almost any analyst, a politician on either side of the spectrum ideologically will say, if the United States cuts off aid to the Contra war will stop because that's where all of the aid for the Contras comes from. However, in El Salvador, they don't get that much aid from outside. And they basically are much more of a homegrown kind of guerrilla movement. They're fighting on their own land, and this provision to suspend military aid to guerrillas is probably not going to make that much difference there. So the chances of real negotiations going on there is possible, and Duarte has said he will meet with them, but whether or not there's really anything that's going to come out of that, people don't know. There's some other things there too, I think we'll go into. And finally, we come to Honduras. And this is where I think, frankly, the real key is going to be. Because this is where the U.S. really gets involved as much as anything else. The Honduran government still, even though a few officials have in the past acknowledged the Contra presence, officially their line is that there are no Contras in Honduras. Even though you can go down there, and there are pictures everywhere of all the Contra camps, and I mean, the United States certainly doesn't hide that. I mean, it's real clear that we send the money down to Contras that are based in Honduras across the border from Nicaragua. But the Honduran government will not officially acknowledge that. So, in this peace plan, they say, yeah, we have no problems abiding by that. We don't have any guerrillas in our country that we have to get rid of. Now, there is a stronger movement in Honduras, even among the Honduran people in the opposition, saying we have got to start acknowledging this. Thousands of people have been displaced in southern Honduras because of the conflict. They say about 7,000 or 8,000 people. And that's in a very sparsely populated area. They've left because of the fighting and because the Contras used to come in. And I heard stories about how the Contras used to come into their little villages and just sort of pillage the place. But so they've left. The one pressure that some people say may turn the Hondurans into changing is the fact that they have increasing numbers of refugees from El Salvador, from Guatemala, and some from Nicaragua, primarily the Mosquito Indians that we talked about the other day, for those of you who were here. And they can't deal with that problem. They don't have the resources. There's some UN support there, but most of them, they're left to deal with their own. Honduras is the poorest country in Central America. So it's becoming a problem that they cannot deal with, and they see this peace plan as a possibility of trying to help with that. But the fact is, it's probably not going to go anywhere unless they do abide by number five. That really becomes then the issue of how will the U.S. respond? I mean, I think that's really the crucial issue. If the U.S. tells Honduras, okay, you can go ahead and admit that the Contras are there, and you can, and we're willing to cut off our aid and move the Contras, either repatriate them to Nicaragua if they want to go back, or move them to the United States, whatever, then I think Honduras will certainly abide that. But Honduras is really so dependent on U.S. aid that they're not going to probably push too hard against the United States. And then the final sort of crucial question is, will the United States discontinue the funding of the Contras? Because if we don't, the whole peace plan will fall apart. That's really clear. Yet, all indications are that right now, Reagan is preparing to propose $150 million in Contra aid for the next 18 months. Now, there's been some question about whether he wants, there's been some proposal that he put it in escrow. That the Congress approved the money and then they have it right there ready to go if Nicaragua doesn't provide by the provisions. But other people say he's not going to propose that, he's going to propose straight outright aid. So I just see that, and that is coming up right now in Congress. And I just feel like if the United States can, in light of what is going on in Central America, and you have the Central American countries next door to Nicaragua saying, we're willing to live with you, we're willing to negotiate with you, and you have the United States that refuses to abide by that, I just think it's an unpardonable sin. And all polls in the United States for, up until last year, this is polls in the United States for 7 or 8 years said 60 to 70% of Americans opposed Contra aid. Now Oliver North has changed that, and the latest polls say that it's 50-50 since he went on the air. And that is appalling to me, but that a man who's done what he has done can change opinion in that direction. But that is the situation, and right now I just got a news release last week in the mail from organizations that I get constant updates on. And right now, though, even though it seems that it's still probably maybe a slight majority who oppose Contra aid, the letters coming into Congress are still a majority favoring Contra aid because of all the hype around Oliver North and all that. So it really poses a real increased responsibility on those of us who are opposed to that. So what can we do? I will just sort of end by running through that, and then we can talk for the last part. I do think that letters are important. I used to be very cynical about the power of letters, and I still don't think that that's the only thing that we can do. But I am aware more and more of how much Congress, congressional representatives really do count letters. and really do base some of their decisions on that. I have some information up here if anyone's interested. I have sample letters, I have addresses, I have a list of what representatives voted which way in the last Contra 8 vote. So I really encourage people to think about that, and if you want to see that afterwards, fine. There's also a, well, I don't think we'll get into that. There's also a real value in writing letters to the presidents of the Central American countries, really lauding them for their courage and actions right now and supporting their efforts and encouraging them to go forward with that. And I have addresses for those people as well. Another thing that I think we can do is simply educate other people. Is trying to take some responsibility for keeping up with what's going on, trying to get sources of information other than just the party line, so to speak, because I frankly do not believe 50% of what our administration gives us on the Nicaraguan issue. I really don't. And I think to have the courage to raise questions with people about these issues. And I've got some list of stuff here in terms of resources for where I think there is good information. I think a lot of good news, I mean, this is in addition to newspapers. Some are better than others. I have a subscription. I'll just point this out. I don't have this up on the board, but there's a weekly newspaper called In These Times, which is not a regular newspaper in the sense that it reports everything, but it goes into depth on certain issues. And I think it's a good source of information. I really trust it. In addition to that, there are things like Envio, which comes out of the Central American Historical Institute in Managua, Nicaragua, and it's a church-affiliated organization. There's an update by the Washington Office on Latin America. The United Church Board of World Ministries, I'm a member of the United Church of Christ, and they put out a Global Advocates Network update on Central America, if you are interested in that. I have some sheet Xerox for addresses. If anybody's interested in this stuff, I Xeroxed a few. If you really would use them, I would be glad to give you a copy. Other organizations that are really working on this stuff are the Interreligious Task Force on Central America, which comes out of the National Council of Churches, Coalition for a New Foreign Policy, the National Impact Office in Washington, and CISPUS, which is Committee in Solidarity with the People of El Salvador. And then the next section up here is, I mean, I would encourage people to consider going to Central America. Some people have asked me about that in the last few days, and I just thought I would. I have addresses for Witness for Peace, Oxfam, the Center for Global Education, are all organizations that sponsor various kinds of tours and study groups in Central America to various places. There are ways in which we can support Nicaragua directly. There's a program called Quest for Peace, which is sponsored by the Quixote Center, which is a Catholic organization out of Maryland, in which they're trying to raise $105 million, which is the exact same amount that we sent in military aid to the Contras. They're trying to raise $105 million to send humanitarian aid to Nicaragua. And I just remembered I did not bring that address down here, but I do have that if anybody's interested in that. I think they already have about $75 million. And we can do things like, we buy Nicaraguan coffee here at Holden. I don't know if you knew that or not, but all of our coffee is Nicaraguan coffee. It has to be imported from Europe because we can't, by U.S. law, import anything directly from Nicaragua because we have a trade embargo on it. And then finally, just to let people know that they're right now, because this month is during the Contra Aid vote, it's leading up to it, there are a number of the sort of coalition of groups in the United States dealing with Central American issues have been involved in very intense negotiations, lobbying, letter writing to congressmen, and then demonstrations on Tuesday, September the 29th, all over the country. So I invite those of you who are leaving Holden to think about calling any of the local offices of these particular places. or the organization that I've been a part of really since it was founded in Boston, the Pledge of Resistance, which has now got offices all over the country, and I know there's one in Seattle. Again, I have addresses for those, and they are often involved in organizing these kind of things. And I do believe that demonstrations, when handled creatively and nonviolently, really can sway public opinion and change political votes when they're handled well. So that's a real speedy run through on peace in Central America. See, I actually got through everything I had on the board this time. Yeah. Questions, comments? Yes. It's on the contra-aid vote. Reagan says, I still want to submit this for you to vote on in September. Most Congress is saying, we'll vote on it in November. The dates for implementation of most of these provisions is November the 7th. It's 3 months after the August 7th signing. And Congress is saying, why do you want to pass this now and jeopardize the peace process? We will. So there is that debate going on. It looks like, I'm not really sure, frankly, if it's been in the last few days, I haven't, because I've been doing all these sessions on Central America, I haven't had time to keep up what's going on in Central America. But I'm not sure if that's been decided yet or not when the vote is actually.
Well, I think the last thing I heard, Schultz had said,
it was 150. What they've done is they went from 105 for 1 year to 150 for 18 months.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That sounds like.
Where can you buy the broader?
You can get it from an organization called Friends of. Is it the Earth? Friends of the Third World. We have that address. In fact, we used to have it up on the coffee urn. I think the tape got sort of pulled off and has never been put back up there. But what you could do is write them. See, they're a distributing company. You could write them and ask them, where in my town or city do you send this coffee? That would be probably the best way to find out. First of all, I just think that anybody who goes to Central America or any place in the Third World is usually transformed by that experience. I just think that in a number of ways, if we go and we visit churches, I think we can really be transformed in a religious way. I also think that just simply direct contact with a situation does more to teach us about what's really going on than all the reading we could possibly do. In addition to that, I really do feel like that in Nicaragua, that groups who are going out of a real sense of struggle with our policy really give the Nicaraguans a sense of support. And they say that, and I really think they're sincere in that. Witness for Peace, especially, is that the other two groups are more really of a study kind of group. Witness for Peace is certainly for that purpose, but Witness for Peace is set up specifically to go into areas where there is more of a chance of conflict. And you really do, were you here yesterday when I talked about my trip there, it was really clear that the Contras stopped fighting in the area when we entered it. And even though we were only there for 4 days, and certainly the people still had to put up with that after we left, there was a sense of reprieve while we were there. They felt like they had a rest. And they said that, and we didn't bring it up, they said that. I think that was true. So I think it's a way of showing some support and solidarity. I don't think everyone has to go there. Yeah, go ahead.
Can I add?
Sure.
That I've been down to Latin America twice, and the transformation we talked about is probably most important for me when we need to talk to you. In that when I sit here and listen to Barry or anybody, listen to the policy, to what's going on, I get angry and frustrated and really irritated and almost despairing about it. Since I've been there, I have faces and stories and a real sense of the hope and the vision and the dreams that people have there because I've heard and seen from them. And also a real sense that I have given something to them because they, every single person that we ever talked to said how much it means. I mean, not that I have anything to do with it. I came every time with my eyes to look in the ears to hear, and that's about it. But every single person said it means so much to know that you care and to come and see what's going on. That tells us that there are people in the country who do care about us. And that gives us the hope and it makes them feel. The peace or whatever, to continue to pursue something so faithful.
Other questions or comments or additional information?
How is your curriculum consistent on an election in Nicaragua?
In Nicaragua, you mean? Well, he consistently said that the election in 1984 was a fraud, even though, as we discussed yesterday, all sorts of international independent organizations have said it was quite fair, and that in fact it does represent the fact that the majority of the people in Nicaragua would even today vote for a Sandinista party president. I don't know. I mean, what's the big difference between 1988 and 1990 when you're talking about a major kind of peace thing? Why hold it up on something like that? As I expressed yesterday, I really do, and other people I'm sure may see differently, but I really do think that Reagan, there is some kind of obsession with Nicaragua. I really do think that it's... Nicaragua is not abiding by the rules. Nicaragua is not playing by the rules of the game, which is basically in Central America has always been that the United States gets what it wants, and they are really challenging that. And I certainly think for him it's a very simplistic worldview that where the whole world is divided into the U.S. and the Soviet Union, and you line up the countries on either side, and anybody on the other side has got to be crushed. And so I think that there's just an obsession with almost getting anything we can. That's what I, and that's actually a this Costa Rican official, let me see if I can find this, who essentially said the same thing. It says, the Reagan administration is blind, obsessed with Nicaragua. But they are not going to succeed in overthrowing the Sandinistas. In the end, what they are going to do is destroy Costa Rican democracy. This is in response to the whole sort of thing I was talking about earlier about the pressures being put economically on Costa Rica. And they were just saying that Costa Rica is not a radical. This is a pretty conservative country, and the administration is fairly conservative to moderate. And they're saying, in fact, Arias's response evidently to Reagan. Arias went to Washington back in the late spring and had a meeting with Bush and Reagan, and of course it was a closed meeting, but there was a quote afterwards that Arias was just furious because all the pressure was on him to pull out of the negotiation. And his response was, there are only two people in the world that support your Contra policy, that's the United States and Grenada. which isn't exactly true. Israel does, and there have been other countries that have given to the Contras. But I guess what I'm trying to say is that even a conservative Central American neighbor to Nicaragua, which has probably been the most, by and large, has felt the most threatened by Nicaragua, is saying Reagan is obsessed by it. And I don't know how else to respond to how he's dealt with it. And in fact, even, you know, my response is that even if you agree with the overall purpose of overthrowing the Nicaraguan government, his plan has been so irrational and obsessed that he's not even done a good job of following his own goals, just like in his peace plan. I think he's just really obsessed with it so much that his foreign policy is not at all intelligent. Other
yes. The United States frightened of a political solution to the Nicaraguan problem. They seemingly were obsessed with the military solution to the problem, and we don't want a political solution. And therefore, we try to torpedo a political solution that is proposed. And this is part of it.
I think you're right, and I think one of the reasons for that, I think, is that we really do want to overthrow that government. We really do not want to allow that government to become a government that actually works. And I think in the back of some people, officials' minds, is the realization that Nicaragua really could become a democratic model. And we don't want that to happen because we've already set ourselves at odds against them. And if that works, then it makes us look
bad. It could start as extreme socialist and kind of move toward centralist, toward democracy, and we don't want to see that happen.
Right. Yeah. Right. I think we forced it more, right. We forced it to become more Soviet-allied than they ever would have been if we hadn't been fighting. Thanks very much.